News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour. I'm Nick Young.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It's cloudy, windy, a lingering shower or two, a high in the 50s, but we're looking at a high temperature tomorrow and Thursday around 80. The five-day AccuWeather forecast is coming up.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. We cover a number of topics today, including housing and the economy and the ongoing trade dispute. As well, we'll be taking a look at the graduated income tax proposal from Governor Pritzker.
And we're asking how serious this talk between the U.S. and China could be about Long March, signaling no end to the trade war anytime soon. Also, baby boomers are not buying homes later in their age. Usually they do, but apparently they're sticking to the Florida.
Well, we have a rally underway on Wall Street. It's continuing since the opening this morning. Let's get the latest numbers. Take a look at how things are going as we head into the afternoon hours with Elisa Peretti.
Yeah, Nick and Chris, it's looking pretty good. The Dow up 166 points now, or 0.2% to 25,846. The NASDAQ gaining 88 points, or more than 1%. S&P up 25 to 2865. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index now in the green, up more than 1%. The Commerce Department has granted a limited 90-day reprieve from a ban on U.S. companies using equipment from Chinese telecom Huawei. So that change is a relief for chip makers and the tech sector in general. They're swinging higher after yesterday's steep slide. Trade tensions have derailed the global economy, placing it on a subpar pace. At least that is the latest outlook from Paris-based OECD. It's again lowering its global forecast. And U.S. existing home sales down in April for the fifth time in 6 months. That despite lower mortgage rates. Back to you, Nick and Chris.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
State of Illinois is a step closer to a graduated income tax. We're going to be covering that in our next segment. Right now, a report on sales of existing homes tops today's economic data while the U.S.-China trade impasse drags on. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, who is a chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Carl. What strikes you today?
Well, you said that top the data was more like bottom the data. Disappointing outcome there for existing home sales, where some of the other leading indicators suggested that we might be seeing some improvement. Maybe it's just forestalled until later this quarter. But when we dissect the details, we can see kind of weakness across regions and category of purchases, whether it's a single family home or condos and apartments, those types of things. So we see a kind of disappointing outcome, and when we look at the price trend, we see that home price appreciation just continuing to grind lower. So nationally, still up in positive territory, but only about 3 to 4% in year-on-year terms. So that trend has been cooling as the economic cycle has worn on and the Fed has continued to nudge interest rates higher.
We are going to be talking about this a little later on the Noon Business Hour, but it appears that baby boomers are not downsizing like other people have done in their 50s, 60s for their final, and they're staying in the home that they've been in for a long time.
Staying in place and not necessarily willingly. As we look at things like, for instance, there's the Case-Shiller Home Price Index, which we can see metro areas, we can still see a significant share of housing markets have not yet surpassed the pre-housing bust peak. And that means that a lot of mortgages may still be underwater, and then unfortunately those homeowners don't have the ability or maybe are not inclined to take the loss on the home price, and so they're kind of locked in place and prevented from maybe moving into retirement housing or whatnot. The good news is, even though I said home prices are the rate of appreciation is grinding lower, it's still positive, which means that with each passing month or each passing quarter, more of those underwater homes are finally starting to move back to a break-even territory.
Carl, let's turn our attention, if we can, to the ongoing ongoing trade dispute with China. And certainly the rhetoric doesn't sound hopeful when you have the leader of China echoing history in calling for a new long march. It would seem that they are digging in for the long haul.
It appears that both sides are digging in for the long haul, and that raises a concern that not only the current tariffs will be maintained, but also that we could see further escalation later this year. It doesn't look like anyone's willing to compromise until there's a significant market strain. Now, mind you, there have been some reactions in the equity markets, both here and also in China, but not enough to draw leaders to the negotiating table. So my concern is there's only one direction this is going through the end of the year.
And if you can, what are the key trigger points?
Well, I think the key trigger point, equity markets tend to be a leading economic indicator. So there will be impacts elsewhere in the economic data. In fact, factory output and factory employment hasn't been particularly strong so far in 2019. But wherever we're headed, the equity markets are going to get there first. So I think the trigger point will be a significant sell-off in equities that would cause both sides to kind of reassess if we should continue on this path.
Do you, of course, as we've been watching the president, every once in a while, he just shows up and the mic goes on and he talks about these things. So you said that we may have to wait, but perhaps not.
Well, we don't have to wait to hear from him for certain, but I think we will have to wait for him to change his stance. The president has, over the course of the last several years and over the course of his career in the public eye, pivoted on a lot of topics. But one topic where he's been very consistent has been trade policy and tariffs. So I don't think he's going to have a real significant evolution in using that as a lever against other countries that have a significant trade surplus with the U.S.
Well, Carl, we always appreciate your insight. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Carl Riccadonna, the chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. And coming up, a change could be coming to the state income tax system in Illinois.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
An Illinois House committee has approved a proposed constitutional amendment to install a graduated income tax in the state. Let us get the latest right now from Greg Hines, columnist with Crane Chicago Business. Greg, good to have you back on the program this afternoon, and fill us in if you would.
Well, Governor Pritzker's at the top of his list is refinancing state government with, and hopefully getting some new money. And the way he wants to do that is through a graduated income tax, dumping the flat tax we have now in favor of what he calls a fairer tax, in which people who make more would pay a greater percentage of their income than people in lower income groups. It's probably going to pass, at least through the legislature. Under the law, you have to first has to get through both houses with a 60% vote, and then it has to be approved in a referendum that he wants to hold in November of 2020. The mayor has already passed the Senate, the authorization measure, but it's a little closer in the House, where Mike Madigan and his people tend to be a little more worried about things like reelection and whether they're going too far on taxes than they do in the Senate, where they have wider margins. So there's been some questions about whether this is actually going to pass or not. Well, there was a big step forward last night where, despite some reservations, the House Revenue Committee approved it on a strictly party-line vote. Included in that party-line vote was one of the Democrats who had been waffling on this issue. It now goes to the House floor, and if the Democrats hold together, they can afford to lose three votes and still get the thing to the governor's desk and to voters in a referendum in 2020.
Have we ever been this close in the past?
Oh, no. Not even vaguely, Chris. Former Governor Quinn, for instance, talked about it but never introduced an amendment. It's got big-time political muscle behind it this time. The governor campaigned on this issue. So he's got some capital to spend, and he's spending it. Some people don't like it. They say, hey, it's just going to drive rich people from the state and all this income we think we're going to get, we're not going to get because people will move their residence. But the governor seems quite determined about it.
So, again, that's one of the key sticking points, then, is the argument that if we put this into place, people are going to flee the state, and that will leave us in worse shape than we're in now.
Yeah, there's also an economic argument that you know, Illinois is a relatively high-tech state as it is. This would make us a somewhat higher tax state, but the Democrats point to states like Minnesota that have higher taxes than we are and where their economy seems to be thriving, and make the argument, hey, what business most wants is stability, and we have anything but stability in Illinois now. We can't pay our bills. We have this huge unfunded pension liability. The Democrats argue that even though this is painful, it's time to bite the bullet and finally bring some stability to state finances, and this will do it.
And the new mayor in Chicago is backing it?
She is. She has her own reasons to do it. Lori Lightfoot has her own financial problems. There's a budget deficit of at least $740 million in the 2020 budget she's going to have to unveil soon. She says actually higher than that. And municipalities will get a cut of the revenues from this new thing. So any additional money she can get from Springfield, she wants more of this, she will take very gratefully.
Greg, thanks so much for joining us today. Greg Hines, columnist at Crane Chicago Business.
WBBM News Time 1226, as we bring you the latest market numbers and more, sponsored by Roosevelt University's part-time MBA program. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Nick, we have the biggest gain so far of the session. The Dow up 173 points, or 0.2%. NASDAQ on the rise by 87, S&P gaining 25, and the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg up 0.1%. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Planting progress at corn was up 10. We're now up 6.5 to 6. We got down to only up 2. Beans are up 15 early and then down 13. At the moment, down 5 to 6, and wheat was up 14 to down 3 early. We're up a penny or two. Wide ranges on lack of planting progress, less demand, and yields less on poor planting. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time 1230 and good afternoon. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Kreidel with our top stories.
Stocks are rallying today. We will see what's lifting the markets.
More baby boomers are deciding to take a pass on downsizing, and they stay in their homes.
Investigators are looking for answers in a deadly crash on the Bishop Ford Freeway that closed all inbound lanes during the morning rush.
Travel Tuesday, record summer season is projected for U.S. airlines, but several different factors could cause extra delays and cancellations.
And we have a rally underway on Wall Street with the Dow up 161 points, the S&P 500 up 24, and the NASDAQ right now is ahead 83. Points.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Now, markets are in the black today, and we are joined this afternoon by Jack Ablin, the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital in Chicago. Jack, give us a bigger picture and focus in on some of the key areas today for us, if you would.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for the invitation. It looks like we're on a risk-on day. Perhaps we're seeing a little bit of tension ease out of UK with the Prime Minister May backing off a little bit, arguing that if the Parliament votes for one measure, that she would allow for another referendum. So perhaps we're starting to see some progress made there. A little bit of easing tensions in the China trade dispute with Huawei and Google and so forth. And so I just think that perhaps some of the, you know, political tension that's been going on is lifting a little bit today, and that's lifting investor spirits and lifting stocks.
What about some of these earning reports that have come out?
Yeah, it was a mixed bag. You know, the retailers came out, and Kohl's certainly had was a big disappointment, actually. Investors had thought that this was the new darling of retail, having worked a relationship with Amazon. And so they were somewhat surprised, disappointed with the firm's outlook for the rest of the year. Home Depot also had somewhat lackluster same-store growth comparisons, although investors, I believe, are taking that stock up today nonetheless.
It's really an interesting story at Boeing, which the shares are higher today, and it goes back to an event that occurred in a crash in March.
Yeah, there's a theory out there that it wasn't necessarily caused by the faulty software, but in fact birds getting into engines and causing a disruption, and so I think that there may be some attention turned a little bit away from Boeing. I think longer term, Boeing will survive. This news flow and most investors probably a year or two from now will forget about all of it. Actually,
Jack, what do you have your eyes on today or this week that it interests you?
Sure. I mean, I did write a piece today that looks out at fiscal spending. And what I find is that this push of angry voters who are resentful of the elites and the insiders and those getting a better deal or controlling their government, or at least the perception, that is really in Europe is running about a year to a year and a half ahead of the U.S. So if we look at what's going on there, perhaps we could get some clues as to what could potentially happen here. And what I find is that the governments, lawmakers in France, for example, are willing to breach their budget deficits, in an effort to assuage these angry voters and these yellow jackets and protesters. So to the extent we get similar pushback here at home, particularly surrounding the 2020 elections, it's entirely likely, given that monetary policy has pretty much run its course, that we could see some fiscal spending going on, some government spending to try to boost growth and assuage these angry voters. And that, for risk taking is probably it's not great long term. We don't like to run budget deficits and ramp up our debt. Short term, however, it will keep the economy going faster than what we would expect. And probably a good backdrop for risk-taking.
And as you suggest, with significant political implications.
Absolutely. And that's really, the fact is that economics and political science really aren't sciences. They're social sciences. I mean, they're not hard sciences. They're social sciences. And a lot of it is just going to be a reaction of, collective behavior. And if the pendulum in either case swings too far, my guess is we're going to start seeing measures to move it back toward the middle.
Jack, is there some area of the market that is intriguing you and you're watching it and you may invest?
Yeah, I think that, while most of the market does appear expensive, certainly stocks relative to their history and valuations high, bonds relative to yields are low. Master limited partnerships and these pipelines do offer an interesting play to investors who want to focus on the U.S. It tends to insulate them from the vagaries of Twitter tirades and global events. If we do see rising tensions that result in higher oil prices, that will likely create a nice fundamental tailwind for master limited partnerships, which on a valuation basis are relatively cheap. They're trading well below their 15-year median on valuation. So probably not a bad place to be.
All right, Jack. Well, we always appreciate having you on the program. Thank you very much for joining us today. Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. And up next in Travel Tuesday, a work slowdown, plus some other issues threatening what's expected to be a record summer season for air travel. It is a Travel Tuesday. The trade group Airlines for America is projecting a record summer travel season with passenger volume up 3.5% over last year. But there could be some snags for customers taking to the skies in the coming months. We are joined by Ken Goldstein, who is president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Ken, it's good to have you back on the program today. And we're looking at perhaps record travel, but some clouds on the horizon in the form of, there are some shortages, I think, a pilot shortage for one thing, and then labor disputes as well.
Well, let's talk about that. First off, thank you, Nick and Chris, for having me on. I think the discussion needs to go from the fact we've got the optimism by the, as you pointed out, the Airlines for America, the trade group for the airlines, then there's going to be, as you said, 3.5%, for it's really 3.4% compared to last year, about 257.4 million passengers are going to be flying between June 1st and August 31st. But the bad lining or dark side of that is that, A, you got a problem still with the 737 MAXs, and the airlines are scrambling, particularly United, who has the fewest amount of them, Southwest and American, to put planes in their place because these are grounded and probably will not be flying until August. So the question comes up, what do we do? And then on top of that, and this happened this morning, American filed an injunction or sought a preliminary injunction in Texas against their two unions who represent the mechanics, the Teamsters, International Machinists Union, and the Transport Workers Union. The irony of that last statement is this is almost a carbon copy of what they had the problem, Southwest had a problem with its mechanics as they were in negotiations. It's all economic leverage. The union saying, wait a minute, you're reporting great profits. We want part of that. The airline saying, wait a minute, we got to negotiate. And in the meantime, the poor passenger is standing there saying, what am I going to do? So yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
I want to remind our listeners, Travel Tuesday is sponsored by Kaler Luggage. This it has the echoes, does it not, of the labor troubles with the pilots some years ago?
It does to a degree, but the concern here is with the pilots and with the mechanics, because they give the certification or they check out the planes that are flying. And right now, remember, we because of the 737 MAX 8, people are very concerned about flying with that respect. Give you an example. The stock market opened this morning, and Boeing stock went up. Why? Because there was an erroneous report that one of the accidents was caused by a bird strike, which knocked out the sensors on, I believe it was the Ethiopian plane. They're not really sure this is totally true because there's more to the situation than that because of the system that they had. But this will show you what's going on out there, the feeling out there.
That's interesting. That's interesting, Ken, because the information that we have says that aviation officials think that a bird strike was the factor in the crash.
But remember, that's only, even if that is totally true, that's only part of it, because you still had the problem with the system, the MCAS system that they had, and there's concerns there that the air pilots didn't know how to do it. They didn't have enough experience. There wasn't much in the manual about it. It wasn't into the simulators that they were using. I think there's a very interesting, let's digress a second. Neil Steinberg wrote in the Sun-Times last week, I think it was, that Boeing hasn't, if you will, had any contrition about this. They're kind of still fighting it. They've got to come to the table and say, hey, we didn't do right here. Let's get together and do it right. And that's kind of where we are on that point. You mentioned the pilot shortage. This is an ongoing problem. This is an industry for someone who wants to get involved to become a pilot is quite good. Why? Because more people are flying worldwide, not just the United States. And Boeing, Airbus are turning out airplanes, as are the Chinese, Japanese, Russians. Everyone's flying. So it's a good thing there. It's a good thing that the airlines are expecting more people to fly. The airlines or the airplanes are safe. I wouldn't be overly concerned there. One thing that we talked about a few weeks ago, Chris, you were saying, well, they're going to raise the fare, and very quietly, American did.
Well, Ken, we thank you very much for joining us on today's program. Ken Goldstein, the president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday, and still to come, why more older Americans are choosing to stay in their homes.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
More and more baby boomers are deciding not to downsize, choosing to stay in the home that they've owned for many years. Let's discuss why with Brian Wickert, a president and owner of Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, thanks for joining us. Before we get to the why, tell us who.
Well, there are a lot of baby boomers who are, of course, empty nesters. And they are either working longer, and don't want to move out of their large home. And the real factor that's influencing many people is the hassle factor of selling, because there's a real shortage in many areas of the country, including some areas of Chicago, definitely in southeastern Wisconsin where we're headquartered, where ranch homes and condominiums are in extremely short supply. So the mindset of the baby boomer who does want to downsize is that, what the heck am I going to do when my home sells? Now I'm really under the gun, and you know, now I got to find some place to live. So that, I would say, is the number one reason. The number two reason why baby boomers might be hesitating to downsize is that they've got a sweetheart interest rate. Maybe they locked in at 3.5% on a 30-year fixed rate, or 2.875 on a 15-year fixed rate, which was where rates were in 2016. The National Association of Realtors did a survey, and back in late 2018, when rates were creeping up towards 5%, fully one out of five existing homeowners didn't want to sell and move because of their sweetheart interest rate that they had. That has now dropped down to 14% this year because mortgage rates are back down.
I've noticed that baby boomers are also taking really interesting trips, you know, on the oceans and everywhere.
Yeah, I love doing that myself.
So what does this do to resources in neighborhoods? I mean, what does this do in some of these smaller towns?
Oh, it's definitely contributing to the shortage of affordable housing in many parts of the country. Now, this is going to vary widely based on the state and the county and the city that you're in. But we are seeing cases. I just had a first-time home buyer on her ninth try. She finally got an accepted offer. So she wrote 8 offers and came in second place or worse. In some cases, there were 10 competing offers on the home she was writing. I know we're talking in the $200,000 price range. By the way, the median price in the Chicago area is about $240. So, you know, from the $150 to $240, that's a very popular and affordable price range. That's where inventory is tight. And when people don't want to move, that really puts a crimp on available inventory.
Brian, thank you very much for joining us on the Noon Business Hour today. Brian is president and owner of Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Now, if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the radio.com app.